Okay. Gary?
I'm here.
Okay, you're not hearing anything, are you?
I'm not.
Okay. What he's doing.
It's Thursday night and 8 p.m. in the Eastern Time Zone. You're tuned in to the Profits Plus e-retailer conversation conference call.
Welcome to the Profits Plus e-retailer conversation. This is host co-host Bill Kendi, and tonight we're going to discuss how not to be America's biggest loser. Now, to take that a step further, here is Mr. Tom Shea.
Hello, Bill Kendi.
Hi, Tom. I got a little tongue-tied there for a minute.
Too many words with the right whatever.
Now, what's up, Doc? But anyway, how are you, my friend?
I'm fine, and that makes a good point. Yes, how to not be the biggest loser. Good idea for tonight.
You know, my wife loves that program, and I thought it was a little bit of a reverse being apropos sort of thing. And I think we got a really neat program coming up tonight.
I think tonight will be a very good one. We're glad to have tonight's guest. Let's see, before we continue our little discussion, let me take care of all the gibberish we got to throw in. Tonight is May 16th, 2013. This is the E-Retailer Conversation Conference Call. Tonight's session is being recorded. It will be on the ProfitsPlus.org website, available hopefully later tonight by our information stud, Bruce, in two formats. It will be available as an MP3 as a download for those who have iPod or similar devices, or you'll be able to go to the website and do a click and listen to hear it right there from your computer. During the course of the evening, we will be monitoring for messages that come in. People who have questions, if you have picked up the announcement that came to you today, you can send an email to Tom Shea at profitsplus.org, or you can send an email to simply by hitting reply, which will send it to editor@profitsplus.org, and we will be glad to respond. Or Facebook, you can simply just type in Tom Shea. You'll find my picture there, and we will gladly take and make sure that your question is a part of all those that we are going to take and ask our guest during the course of this evening. So,
if someone runs into some background noise, how do they mute the call so it doesn't interrupt everybody else?
Star 6.
Okay.
Star 6 will put people out of the loop with. So if you're in your business,
the conference is in lecture mode.
You'll be able to mute your voice, and then later on you can come back and jump in with a star 6 to get back into it. Good point, sir.
All right.
So that being said, we have a neat guest tonight that we were thrilled to find him through a mutual friend connection, right?
All righty.
So,
Mr. Jerry Obarski?
Yes.
It is, sir.
All right. Bill, let me hand it back to you, and you do the formal introduction of our guest.
All right. For those of you listening, Jerry is a 37-year veteran with major department stores. Biggest one of which is now Macy's. And Jerry pretty much in touch with the theft, circuits, and fraud, and with just 37 years of experience with big guys. He's also a very decorated military veteran. And he's going to tell us how not to allow our inventory to walk out the door and how to do a better job on keeping profits up where they should be. So, Jerry, welcome.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
So, Jerry, we thought the music was appropriate from two standpoints. We know that you're a Beach Boys fan.
Absolutely.
Which would say you are a child of the 60s.
Yeah, to say the least.
Okay. And you have seen the Beach Boys live somewhere, perhaps?
Several times over the years.
Okay. Who's your favorite?
It's been a while. It's been a while.
Okay. Who's your favorite Beach Boy?
Oh, that's a toughie.
That's a toughie. I like the composite group together. I don't know that I'd pick one out.
Okay.
It's the whole genre, the whole thing.
Alrighty. And for you and other Beach Boy fans, do you have next Tuesday marked on your calendar?
I do not, I have to admit. What's next Tuesday? I have
Tuesday is the day the album from the live 50th anniversary tour comes out.
That's right. That's right.
So that's the moment where you go, everybody goes hopping out to grab the live one where Brian and Al and Mike and Bruce and the hardcore, what's left of the original group, minus Dennis and Carl, the original group is left to sing. Next Tuesday. You should tell Ann. It's an early Father's Day gift.
That's a great idea. I think I will.
Fair enough. So, your history, sir, other than a decorated military individual, properly said, a military hero.
Well, I'm not sure about that. Most of my background, the bulk of the background, was with a May Department Stores division centered out of Pittsburgh by the name of Kaufman's. And the majority of my time there was as vice president of loss prevention. And my number one, pretty much sole objective was to keep the inventory shrink number for that 60-store chain at as low a possible number as I could. Subsequently, I ended up with Macy's because Macy's bought out May Company, and at that point I was stationed out in St. Louis, and we had at that point through Macy's division called Macy's Midwest, 100-store chain. But my objective was still the same. I was primarily responsible for designing and operating store-level shrinkage reduction programs in coordination with senior management, store management, loss prevention, putting together the approach we needed to use as a company to keep our shrink to as low a possible number as we could. That was my, by far, primary focus for most of my career.
In the world of retail, do we have some sort of a guideline number that says this is what percentage of gross sales winds up being, if we're going to use the word shrinkage as an overall title, do we have some sort of a number to say this is what disappears in one shape, form, or fashion?
Well, total shrink, and that's all categories, for 2011 was a little over 1.4%. If you look at department stores, that's generally going to be a little bit lower. If you go to the other end of the spectrum, particularly some of your high-end ready-to-wear stores or even some of your supermarkets will have a tendency to have a higher shrinkage rate. On the lower end of the spectrum, you'll have places like jewelry stores where everything is virtually under lock and key and it's, you know, a one-to-one associate to customer servicing. So it runs a gamut, but our objective normally in a department store was 1% or lower.
Which is a big number.
Oh, it's a big
number. I have a question for you, sir.
Sure.
You know, I've always heard that when it comes to loss, there's really three different categories, and that's theft, shrinkage, and fraud. Is that true, or is everything just labeled under shrinkage? You know, theft being
theft. It's more, really more properly broken down by, from a category standpoint of, at least this is the way we looked at it, and I think it's the way the NRF looks at it. Portion of it being employee theft, a large portion of it being shoplifting.
Right.
Another portion being retail or administrative or however you want to call it, paperwork errors in the form of price changes or mark out of stocks not properly recorded.
Yeah.
And a final category of vendor shortages, inadvertent or purposeful, could be either way.
Yeah.
Those are generally the four categories that encompass shrinkage.
And out of the four, which is the highest percentage of that total, you know?
From a percentage standpoint, it's usually employee theft.
Really?
Can be 40 to 42 or 43%, and that's gonna vary certainly by company and by type of company. Followed by shoplifting in the high 30s to low 40% range. The difference there being is you're going to have a lot more physically, a lot more shoplifting cases than you are internal employee theft cases. Numerically, you're going to have more cases. Your admin errors, 12-15%, depending how structured or how well your policies and procedures are administered. And then a couple of percentage points on vendor shortages, vendor fraud, that sort of thing. And that's going to differ significantly by business and by company.
Does that include damage stuff, Jerry, or no?
Damage would really fall under, in my way of thinking, from my experience, would fall under administrative errors. Very specifically, if you throw a damaged piece of merchandise out that you own and don't properly take it off the books, you've got shortage.
Yeah.
And it can be a large number, and my experience in a department store, we had numerous programs, policies, and procedures to administer that because our number at the time over the course of a year could be in the millions of dollars. So if you didn't properly administer that, you're shooting yourself in the foot, and that's a controllable one.
Yeah. So in essence, your position was that of a bit of a detective, right?
Well, security reported to me. I'm not a security professional.
Security
was part of what we had to do to keep the shrink low, along with policies and procedures, along with an auditing program, some detective work, as you're mentioning here, creating a lot of awareness from the chairman on down to the sales associate in the ready-to-wear department. It encompassed all of that.
You know, Jerry, speaking of detectives, Mr. Tom tells me that you're a fan of one of the world's most well-known and well-read detectives. Is that true?
Well, I'm a Sherlock Holmes fan, if that's what you mean.
Bingo.
Yes.
Very cool. Very cool.
Let me ask a question.
Sure.
Because a lot of our audience is retail-oriented, when it comes to monitoring merchandise, we have options such as tagging merchandise,
right?
Cameras, mirrors. Yes. I would say most of the people who are listening to this program are not people who have people on the floor or house detectives or stuff like
right.
that. They've got to rely on something of
technology.
A piece of technology. You're Your thoughts on those? Do they make a difference at all, and which ones make a difference?
Well, we would have a tendency to categorize loss prevention activities or loss prevention deterrence either as passive or active. Passive being locks, cables, EAS tags, things like that. Active being detectives on the floor, a monitored CCTV system, but most importantly, knowledgeable and interactive sales associates.
Right, now, to make sure we get people on board, which CCTV is closed circuit television.
Closed circuit TV, yes.
Okay, just want to make sure I didn't want to lose anybody in the acronym.
Right, right. CCTV, closed circuit TV, and that can range from simple camera systems of, you know, just a couple of cameras to cover some back hard to see areas in your location, whether it's retail or a warehouse or whatever. You know, a couple of cameras monitored at a main wrap desk or in an office, to CCTV systems that are interactive with your POS system to see lifetime transactions with pan, tilt, and zoom recordable cameras. I mean, CCTV can run the gamut from very simple to very complex. But it's a tool. It's a tool.
Yeah.
That's all it is. It's a tool.
Now, are you including in this category the idea of a, which I see very frequently in small businesses, a camera system that's connected to a recording system of some sort, and it's more reliant upon after the fact that person looks suspicious or we find something's gone, and now we want to go back and see if we can find who stole it?
Well, less effective if that's the only way you're using it. Less effective that way, because that requires then somebody to go through what could be hours of recording. Obviously, they can speed through it and things like that, but less effective use of CCTV.
Okay. So let me ask this question, because there's a lady who's listening in tonight. Her name is Debbie, and I want to cover her question from multiple aspects.
Okay.
And Debbie was asking, so what's the best camera security system? So you've answered the first way it could be answered, and that is to say live monitoring of the camera system as compared to recorded is preferenced, whether it be in a somewhere in the back room someone's watching it, or it comes
sure.
back to a point of sale. You prefer someone watching it, and I will ask this question leading out of hers. Do I want it monitored in such a way that every customer walking in the door knows that I'm monitoring? I think about businesses that you walk in and you see a TV and everything from the cutesy smile you're on camera to a sign that says we monitor everything. Do I want to do that?
I don't think there's anything wrong with that. We went to the extent in selective stores and quite successfully of putting CCTV cameras facing outward from the entrance to a fitting room complex. Faced out, didn't face in. So our customers knew we saw them going into a fitting room with product. So they
okay.
clearly knew that CCTV was being used.
Okay. Now, and in the case of, in case she's looking for something else, to answer, perhaps
okay.
answer Debbie's question, I'm sure you got pitched with lots of things. Is there a brand? Is there something particular? Because her question is saying, what's the best camera security system?
What's the best? Well, I guess my experience is limited to a large vendor by the name of Sensormatic, but we were on a corporate contract with that. Let me answer Debbie's question this way. There are scores of people out there who can provide CCTV systems for you. Let me let me suggest that she really needs to determine what does she want to do with the camera system. What's the purpose? Is it to monitor some secluded back areas in a building, in a brick-and-mortar store? Or is it more to monitor people moving throughout a larger area where you might need an ability to track somebody? I mean, what's the intended purpose? And then what kind of cameras do you need, and how much do you want to spend?
Yeah.
I mean, you can spend anywhere from under $1,000 for a simple couple of camera systems to tens of thousands for much more complex systems. What's the problem? What do you need to do to solve it? And then what kind of camera quality do you need? And then look to see what kind of vendors are out there.
So let's tell
those would be kind of the steps I would recommend.
Okay. So let's tell everybody that our special guest joining Bill Kindy and I tonight is Mr. Jerry Obarski, who spent 37 years with the May Company and successors of May Company. And this is Jerry's niche. This is his specialty. This is his area where if you want to figure out about how to deal with loss prevention, we've got the right guy on the phone. And we have someone who is, as Bill found out, is a Sherlock Holmes fan. Bill, were you going to test him on that?
Yeah, you know, I'm not anywhere near as extensive as a fan as you are, but, you know, I like Sherlock Holmes and his inductive and deductive manners.
Right.
So I thought I would just ask a little quiz here. Who was Sherlock Holmes' arch nemesis?
Oh, Moriarty.
There you go.
And
who was Moriarty?
I was a professor of mathematics at one of the British institutions.
Uh-huh. Not a very nice fellow.
No, very devious, very cunning, the equal of Sherlock Holmes from a mentality standpoint.
Well, you scored 100% on that one, buddy.
Thank you.
Pretty good. Well, Bill's been doing his homework on this. He's been studying up to make sure. Bill, also, right? You do read Sherlock Holmes.
I do. What is your favorite book by Doyle?
Red-Headed League, maybe. That
yeah.
one. I like that.
Yeah. Well, I find it
Boscombe Valley. There's a lot of them.
The Valley of Fear, yeah.
Yes.
I actually like the Sign of the Four. I think
that's excellent.
Yeah.
That's
anyway,
excellent.
We digress.
So while we're talking dark stories, let's talk about darkness and how in a retail setting light comes into play as a factor for controlling loss.
Sure.
What are you going to tell somebody, Jerry, with regard to taking care of light and how what light can do for it? Is it a mental issue?
If you're looking at it from the standpoint of a shoplifter, anything you can do to remove the degree of ambiguity that a shoplifter needs,
yeah.
be it enhanced lighting, be it CCTV, be it, most importantly, an interactive sales associate, anything you can do in that realm is going to be a good theft deterrent.
So it's
if you've got a,
true that
if you've
the
got
number
a dark
one deterrent
area, it's going to be, you know, it's going to be a gold mine for a thief.
So the number one deterrent is really the eyes. I mean, I remember in my retail experience, the story was the best shoplifting deterrent is not cameras, mirrors, the sensors and stuff, the best security deterrent is eye-to-eye contact with everyone that comes in the door.
It's eye-to-eye contact. It's vocal recognition. If they know you know they're there, you've removed a strong element right there. Now, that's not going to prevent the guy driving up in front of a store in a car and his accomplice running out, smashing a case and grabbing something and running off into a car waiting getaway car. It's not going to prevent that.
Okay.
But it will prevent most shoplifting. It will deter most shoplifting, I should say.
So this speaks to, in a retail setting, that your staff, the only time that they need to be behind the cash register is when they're ringing up sale.
Idealistically, yes. We went to significant lengths to train and educate and motivate our associates on theft deterrence. Not that you wanted an associate chasing a shoplifter out the door, but you wanted the associate to be very cognizant of what to look for, whether it was oversized clothing, suspicious behavior, any number of points that could indicate that a theft was about to happen. We went to large, very lengthy extents to motivate, train, and encourage our associates.
So really that puts great emphasis on the concept. You know, I think a lot of retailers especially don't require that their sales associates do the meet and greet part of the sales process.
That's a big miss.
From a prevention perspective, that's like right up there at the very top, right?
That's at the very top, and I'll take it half a step further. Your associates ought to know what your shrink is. There's no reason to hide it. Our associates knew their shrink by store and by general department area. I mean, that was not something we hid from them purposely.
Yeah. Well, they'd be cognizant of that, yeah. Now, that's part of EBITDA, isn't that shrink?
I'm sorry?
Never mind. I was thinking of something different, yeah. Interesting.
All right, so let's tell people that, again, Jerry Obarski is our guest tonight. We're at the bottom of the hour, and our tradition, Jerry, is that when we come to halfway through the show, we always like to throw in a commercial break, give you a chance to get about 30 seconds, maybe 45 seconds, to get you a drink of water so that you can go on for the second half, because one of the areas that we'd like to talk about with you in the second half is that component dealing with the staff, which you had alluded to, that the staff was a concern with regards to theft. So Bill, doing his research about the Sherlock Holmes.
Well, I do have one. This is not so much a quiz, it's just a question. You know, I was reading that in the course of the years, over 70 actors have portrayed Sherlock Holmes in about 200 films. And I'm curious, Jerry, I just limited it down to two. Did you like the way Basil Rathbone played Sherlock Holmes, or do you like the way Robert Downey Jr. is playing it today in the movie?
Oh, I guess I'd go with Basil Rathbone, but if I had to pick a favorite, Jeremy Brett was probably the best.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes. Excellent. Just excellent.
All right. Well, we'll come back in just a brief moment with our own Sherlock Holmes, Jerry Obarski. Let's take a break. We'll be right back. You're listening to the E-Retailing Conversation Conference Call with Bill Kendi, Tom Shea, and special guest Jerry Obarski. right, so we're glad to have everybody with us tonight. The May 2013 E-Retailer Conversation Conference Call. Special guest Jerry Obarski. And in our first half of the program, as we were discussing, Jerry, if I heard you right, you said that the biggest piece of theft, we're going to put it into the category of staff?
Well, employee theft, in general, most of your NRF numbers will recognize it as 40 to 45% of shrinkage results.
So sometimes when a person tells me that they've got very loyal employees and they would never leave them, my little radar that goes off my head is saying maybe they're not going to leave you because it's too easy to steal from you, and they couldn't make as much money working someplace else as they can from what you're paying and what they're stealing from you. There may be some truth to that.
Well, I think there probably is. I'm sure you're right. I mean, keep in mind, retail in general is, for your associate level, is not the highest paying profession around by any means.
Right.
So motivation, you know, could be an issue there. Plus, you've got relatively high turnover, particularly for those retail businesses that are significantly impacted by your Christmas season, where you may hire up 20 or 30 or 40% more employees. You're getting some part-time people, and loyalty is probably going to be a bit lower.
And you have a product that they can easily sell to somebody.
Correct.
To pick up the cash. It's fairly clean transaction that they can make.
That's correct.
All right. So what, you know, I know that the majority of our people, small business, and again, it's one of these, oh, you don't understand, Shay, I have very good, loyal employees. And it scares me when people say that they've got good, loyal employees, because it's just, you know, I think you, as a business owner, have become complacent, and you're just sitting back and not worrying about anything. So maybe I can persuade a couple of people out there to make some changes. Tell me some things that, if I own a small business, what can I do? Even though I've got staff who've been with me 5, 10 years,
right,
and they're my friends, and
right,
you know that story. Tell me some things that a small business owner can do, trying to put the confines on it, that at least you're going to make it tough for someone to go and take something.
Well, first of all, you've got to have clear-cut policies and procedures on your POS and administrative functions that your associates are going to be involved in. Clear-cut policies and procedures and approvals, and you've got to monitor to make sure those procedures are being upheld. If you have a list of procedures and they're not monitored, they're meaningless. They're going to be meaningless to the associates. There's no issue if they do it or they don't do it.
What kind of procedures are we talking about, Jerry?
Oh, everything, primarily from your POS terminal procedures.
Yeah.
From returns.
Yeah.
From handling damages. From, depending on what the associate's responsible for, processing inbound receipts, transfer movements, cash handling, although cash shortages are normally not considered part of retail shrink, but nonetheless it's a loss to the company. Those primary procedures that they're going to be involved in have to be spelled out, have to be monitored, and frankly, the associate has to know what will happen if they're caught stealing.
Do you have a number for that, Jerry, with regard to what percentage of theft in the small business world actually goes to prosecution?
Oh, I don't have a number, but I would suggest it's an extremely low number.
Too many businesses content with if I catch the thief, if they're stealing merchandise, get it out of their hands and kick them out of the store and say don't come back.
Yeah, I mean, if your employee theft averages, and I'm just going to make up a number here a little bit because it's normally 7 to 10 times greater than your average shoplifting case. But let's
really?
Say it's $1,500 or $1,800. It may cost you more to prosecute.
Yeah.
Particularly if it's a short-term employee and you're able to determine that that's the extent of the loss.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that said, when it is certainly more significant than that, you know, you may have to make that decision to take it further.
Mm-hmm.
Some companies will go on 100% prosecution basis. Some will make it more judicious as they apply that. You also have to look at local judiciaries as to, you know, how effective is that going to be.
Yeah, I have a question with that, Jerry. Where I live in Michigan, and I had heard, I don't know if this is actually true, but this subject came up here a little while ago, and somebody had told me that maybe it's just in my local jurisdiction that they normally take the value of the thing that is stolen and multiply it by 10 when trying to apply charges to a thief. Is that multiplier common across the country, or is that
that's the first time I've heard that expression.
Oh, I mean, I don't know. I thought that was interesting. So if you steal $30 worth of stuff, technically they could charge you with like a $300, you know. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I could get it wrong too, Jerry. I don't know.
Yeah, I've not heard it expressed that way. I mean, we experienced local areas that would respond quickly and prosecute. Prosecution was not an issue. We had other localities where that was not the case.
Yeah. Okay. I have two other questions. And Tom, let me just have a little rain here for a second. Going back to the camera thing.
Okay.
Is it a detriment to a determined rather to would-be shoplifters? It is worthwhile having dummy cameras.
We employed some as a deterrent. You mean strictly a deterrent capability? We employed some in selected areas where it was either more difficult to get the necessary wiring to get a camera in, or I was overextended on monitors in the security office. We did use some dummy camera placement.
Yeah.
And selectively, I think it can have some degree of deterrent value. Consider that a passive deterrence, but there's some relevance to it.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of second question is, Jerry, I know this is kind of a very difficult question for you to address, but you know, in general, maybe it isn't, I don't know. What sort of items seem to disappear the quickest? I know in the grocery business, things like batteries,
right?
You know, go really quick. They're small, they're easily hideable.
Correct.
You know, yeah.
Well, usually the things that go the quickest are the most easily concealed items. In my world, in the department store, was costume jewelry.
Uh-huh.
That was by far our biggest theft area. Very difficult to see the theft, and if you couldn't see it clearly, we did not empower our loss prevention people to make an apprehension. They had to see the act of concealment. The other end of the spectrum are those items that can be resold quickly. If you go into some of the grocery stores or some of the drugstore areas, The current high theft items are the teeth whitening products, things like that that can be sold quickly at flea markets or on the black market for a third the price, but are consumables that a lot of people want and are willing to look the other way to get it at a cheaper price.
Yeah.
And that differs by business, of course, but those are two general categories.
Mm-hmm. There is no, I know that this is a fact. There's a local grocery store that also sells alcohol. And
okay.
I know that if there was a fella, the doors would open. You know, of course, the night crew would be working all night, but the doors would open for the early folks to come in around 5-ish in the morning, you know, people in the bakery and that sort of thing.
Right.
And they found a fella would wander in. You know, everybody's working hard, stocking their aisles. Nobody's really looking around. He'd go into the liquor department, and he had his pants tied on the bottom, and he'd walk out with four bottles of booze.
Sure.
And I thought, that's pretty brassy. You know, but if your sales associates aren't taught for what to look for,
correct.
You know, I could be just like a person got a bunch of bulky clothes on.
Oh yes, oh yes.
Hmm.
I've seen that. And we didn't carry alcohol in the department stores, obviously, but with other similar products. Oh yes.
Well,
let me ask Jerry, things other than the idea of the cameras and the detection devices. If I'm a business, and I'll give two examples. One product that I put under lock and key, like a glass case.
Okay.
Another item such as the coats and clothing that are on the chain, you know, type of thing, down the sleeve type thing.
Right.
While I look at that and say, boy, you got to be pretty good to get that stuff out. Do you have any information or experience that you can share with people that says something the fact of, you know, I can lock it down, but this is what it cost me in sales because I have made it more difficult for the customer to look at?
Correct. That's an excellent point. When we set our policies for cabling leathers or lockdown of Fendi handbags, or lockable cases for jewelry, we would look at the experience on a by-store basis and make a determination whether that store needed to lock the leathers down or were they a low enough shortage store that we could get away with it. And or on major sale events where I had enough staffing on the floor, I might unlock the leathers or take the EAS devices off the Fendi handbags to facilitate an easier sales transaction. You're right, there's a cost of doing business if you're locking it all down. Generally speaking, the products that you're going to secure like that are more expensive products, and if the customer wants it, they're going to look to get serviced on that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so you're looking for a calculated trade-off.
You are. And we sometimes we would time our trade-offs for periods of time around major sale events.
All right. So while we will have some retailers listening tonight who do not have the elaborate point-of-sale system that you've got.
Yes, sir.
Perhaps there's some things that some people need to implement in their business to at least watch and give them some information if they need to be changing things. I remember in my college days when I worked in the men's clothing store, we had a report that was done every Monday morning, and it was count every sport coat in the store, count every suit that was in the store. Didn't
right.
touch slacks or other things, but those two areas, you had to have a manual count, and you had something that came that gave you, this is when you're through counting, this had better be the number you hit.
Right.
So for an individual store, you would say you need to be doing something with suspicious areas of merchandise, that you need to be doing some kind of a counting, something that's going to tell you, I need theft control or I don't need theft control here.
Yeah, I mean, the key to what you're saying is, where is your shrink coming from?
Mm-hmm.
And one way to monitor it are on-hand counts like that. We would selectively do that on certain high expensive categories of women's ready-to-wear in selected stores. So we needed to know that the 40 pieces we started with on a Saturday morning and the 35 we ended up on a Monday morning, the following Monday, the result was we sold 5 pieces of merchandise. So we would do selectively some degree of counting like that. And the part of the key here is you're involving the sales associate. Get them involved in that process. And if you begin to learn that this is where we're losing product, then you need to make a decision either as to a different floor placement or to the extreme, cabling the product down, depending on what it is, or maybe some additional camera coverage or staffing adjustment or whatever. But part of the key here is you need to know where your shrinkage is.
Well, let's ask this question then. As you mentioned ladies ready-to-wear, were there any particular problems in ladies ready-to-wear? And I think statute of limitations has ran out. Any particular problems with a ready-to-wear buyer that we both know?
No, actually, her shortage was pretty good. It wasn't too bad. Although she bought juniors, and that's a high theft item.
Oh, okay. So we're cutting her a little leeway here. And the person, for those who are in on the, we're talking about is Jerry's wife is Ann Obarski, which is has been a guest in the past, and Ann's company is Merchandise Concepts.
Correct.
But Ann was a merchandise buyer, and that's a connection that she has with her husband with regard to, I guess, having to report and explain what theft that she was having in her areas.
Correct.
Well, Tom, now that you brought in significant others, that segues into another question for Mr. Jerry regarding Sherlock Holmes.
Very good.
Here we go. Sherlock Holmes never really had any romantic liaisons that was written about, except for one alleged one.
Irene Adler.
$7. I was going to say, give me the name of the person who he had allegedly that interest in.
Irene Adler.
Aha, very good again.
Yes. All right, and so let's do this on keeping score. I'm thinking about listening on Saturday morning to NPR's Wait.
Oh, there you go.
And no, you don't want me doing the greeting on your home answering machine, but how's our guest doing tonight, Bill, with regard to...
He's batting 1,000% so far.
Okay. Well, in the last few minutes, before we close up for night, I know you've got more. We'll give you one more shot to see if you can trip him up or if we're going to have to give Jerry an A-plus for this one. As we are into the last quarter of the hour of the e-retailer conversation conference call for May 16, 2013, our special guest, who was kind enough to join us tonight, Jerry Obarski. Jerry spent 37 years in retailing, department store retailing, and we're talking with him tonight and quizzing him as much as we can as to what did the big boys do, of which is his area of expertise, and how can we take those experiences and the information Jerry's got and bring them into our realm of small business, because we don't have a Jerry Obarski working in our business. We have to be left to our own devices to figure out what do we need to do, because if you were to look at your business, and if I were using the number that Jerry gave me, that 1%, well, I think about an extraordinary business owner, and I did say extraordinary, whose net profit, if it were 10%, you would increase your 10% net profit by 10%.
Right.
If you could just eliminate the 1%, that's what it amounts to. And it's like, you know, and for those of us whose business is way down there in the single digits for net profit, and just look at your sales, and if you're writing off loss, or your accountant's doing the job and writing off 3-4% of your business, you go, if I could just pull one of those back, you know, that one goes back into your pocket.
Yeah. Well, said another way, how much more in sales would you have to generate,
right,
to make up for your shrink? I mean, you got to look at shrink, whether you're a major department store or a small business or, frankly, a service business. You have to look at shrink as an expense. How do you control the expense? And in addition to the shrink as an expense, I might suggest you have to look at what we called cost of shortage, which was the shrink and the dollars we spent to control the shrink. It's all going to be dollars, but make sure what you're spending is giving you a return. So
well,
you're
talking about you and your staff.
Well, yes. Absolutely. Absolutely.
So if I have theft and I did not have you and your staff, when I bring you and your staff in, I look at how much you're costing and I look to see what the difference is in shrinkage, and it's like there's a number in there you're looking for to say Jerry's got to be pulling his weight.
It's yes. Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So you've got to look at the security systems to see that they are right for you. I think about a person. I was in their store one day, and they went to the little sensors that they were putting in packages, and this business
sure.
owner was so thrilled. You know, he had this, and he thought he was just cutting edge for a small business and had the little bars at the front doors and all, and I said, oh, sure, you want to show this to me? And it was an unfortunate comedy of errors as he picked up an item and walked out the front door, and I said, well, where's the sensor? I mean, where does the noise go off? Do we not hear it out here? Oh, it's supposed to go off. And he walked back in. He walked out again and a couple of times. And I said, you know, does the shoplifter have to carry it under their right arm to make this thing go off? Is there something to that effect? And he opens up the sensor's not in here. I said, oh, so now the problem is it's your staff that didn't put the
right.
sensor in the box and was very disappointed to find out, no, the sensor was there. And I just, oh, gosh, how much money have you spent on this elaborate
right.
system? Yet Jerry has already told us earlier tonight it's that eye-to-eye contact, and the point that you added was the vocal connection to it.
Yes, sir.
Put those together, and you're saying that far beats any camera system that my friend Debbie is asking about.
Well, it is the number one. I mean, do you need a camera system? Yes, maybe. Do you need EAS tags? Yeah, probably. If you got a lot of ready-to-wear, you may, and you're in a high-theft area. But evaluate what you're getting for each of those tools.
If making you just sure you're getting your money's worth.
Yes, make sure you're getting your money's worth. Absolutely. Absolutely.
So in the couple of moments that we've got, Bill and I have worked to come up with questions to ask you. What have we not asked you, Jerry?
I can't speak to small retailers, but as a department store, if we knew what our shortage history was, we would make a provision each month and charge our earnings a certain amount of shortage each month, and then settle up at the end of the year when we did our inventory. That's called a shortage reserve. Two schools of thought on it. One says that if you use that, are you just kind of kidding yourself? We approached it from the opposite direction, saying if you know you're going to have a 1% or your history is a 1% shortage, your goal is to get to 0.75%, but you better be setting some aside each month as a charge to earnings, an expense, if you will, because you're probably going to have some shortage, instead of waiting to the end of the year and, you know, wiping out the last month with a large shortage.
Yeah, Jerry, we only got a couple of minutes left, but the one thing I know we haven't touched on is what about, we talked about shoplifting internal and external, but we haven't really addressed vendor fraud.
Well, vendor mistakes, let's leave it at that. Let's put it at that.
Okay.
Vendor shipping errors, either inbound or outbound. You've got to develop some sense of knowing what vendor is always accurately shipping and what vendor is not accurately shipping. I mean, you got to have some, again, policies, procedures, and counterbalances to measure that. Vendor shipping errors is a real occurrence. Most of the time, I think it's mistakes. At least that's what we saw as a department store basis. And we developed audit programs to look at that.
Okay.
And the same goes for outbound. If you've got an ability to send something out to the vendor, you need to know exactly what you've sent out and that he's crediting you appropriately.
Okay. Very good. Very
pretty good.
Very,
let's do this one. Right, we got enough to steal 1 minute, Bill. Okay, give him one last shot. Come on, give him one last shot. See if you can fool him with one last Sherlock Holmes.
Well, I'm going to give him two, really, but
okay.
They're both, you know, one's pretty easy. Who were the Baker Street Boys?
Oh, they were the, for lack of a better word, street urchins that assisted Sherlock in observing people, reporting back to him, finding people for him.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Very good. Well, you're still batting 1,000, buddy. My final question is, Sherlock Holmes, or Arthur Conan Doyle got rather tired of writing about Sherlock Holmes. He decided it was restricting his creativity, so he decided to kill him off.
Correct.
Only to bring him back in the Hounds of the Baskervilles.
Correct.
Now, my question is, how did Sherlock Holmes allegedly die, and in what book?
Well, he died going over Reichenbach Falls with Moriarty. That was the death sequence. And the book, Boscombe Valley?
Oh, you got it. I'm going to give it. That's a gimme if you're playing golf. Yeah, the book is Valley of Fear.
Okay, Valley of Fear, yes.
Well, good gun, Bill. You've met your match on this one.
You know, you're doing pretty darn good, Jerry.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
We had the questions, and we'd already talked about it in our early today conference call. I said, you know, look, if the first one or two stump him, I said, you know, let's not make him look bad here. Let's just quit asking the Sherlock Holmes question.
Thanks, I appreciate that.
Well, this was awesome. All right, so we're coming close. It's about time to pack it up and go home, right, Mr. Bill?
You betcha.
So you want to hear about next month?
Well, you're going to tell us about what's happening in the great month of June?
Yes, okay. So everybody can mark the calendar ahead of time. Thursday night, June 20th. Got another special friend, a lady I have known for several years. She is she has multiple aspects to her life that we're going to talk about. For one, she is a retailer, multiple locations. But her area, which is her passion, she loves it. Oh, and she, oh my gosh, gorgeous stores and woman does things that just awesome for an independent to do. The kicker behind it as to a lot of why she can do it, other than just being just plain smart, is the fact that her area of her expertise, her other business, is branding.
Uh-huh.
So we want to talk with her about how can I, what do I need to do, and other than perhaps just hire her, in my business, I'm going to ask her to talk to me about branding for a small business, whether it be product or service.
Mm-hmm. And what is her name, Tom?
Her name is Shelley Brander.
Well,
is that cool?
Did she change her name to fit her fashion?
Yeah, I mean, it's like tonight's guest. Remember, Jerry Loss Prevention?
Yeah.
Next month, we have Shelley Brander. And, you know, and I told you earlier, there's a guy I know out in Vancouver, B.C. I thought about inviting him up on the line, and his name is Mark Startup.
I'll get out of here.
So, yeah, we're finding several.
You're pressing it, Tom. You're pressing it.
Yeah, really.
Well, no, the sad part is I know these people. I do know Mark Startup, and very truthfully said, our guest for next month is Shelley Brander. Shelley lives in Tulsa, Oklahoma. This is her area of expertise. She's going to be our guest for Thursday night, June 20th. That being said, before Bill takes and gives us our leave of for the evening, Jerry, thank you. I know there's a lot of other things you could be doing tonight, but I want to say thank you so much for coming, being with us, for sharing with us your expertise, your knowledge. As I told people earlier, when Jerry was in his career, there's no way you could have walked into his office and sat down and talked to him for this amount of time and said, tell me what to do in my independent store. How do I solve it? And yet tonight you dialed an 800 number. You paid nothing to be a part of the call, and you had one of the great experts on the topic who answered the questions that you sent. And if we have missed a question or someone has thought of something, as I've checked our Facebook and e-retailers for the night and saw that we got everything answered, if you think of something tomorrow, send it to me. I will make sure that I get it to Jerry for you. I will get an answer back to you. So, again, Jerry, thank you.
My pleasure.
Mr. Bill, time for the the magic sound.
All right. Let's hear that going. Don't forget to mark your calendars for June 20th when we're going to be speaking with Shelley Brander on the great subject of branding. And once again, thank you for participating in the Profits Plus e-retailer conversation, and appreciate hope you found this of value, and look forward to your joining us next month. So this is Bill Kendi for Tom Shea and Profits Plus, and just saying thanks again and have a great month. Good night.
Good night.